You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello one and all, welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company yet again for a new golfing week. We have two events to get stuck into. Dave Kellner in the company of Dave Tindall here at William Hill HQ. First of all, a good morning to you, Dave, and surely on a high after Liverpool's exploits in the Champions League.
Yeah, I think last week for me was more about football and golf, to be fair. I didn't watch much.
Don't ever say that in this studio.
Well, I've got to be honest. I didn't watch much of the golf. I was still revelling in, basking, drinking in all the Liverpool win. But as we said outside, what a terrible game, but who cares?
Oh, it was utterly abysmal from yes. A neutral's perspective, because I didn't really care who won. I just wanted to be entertained. And boy, was I not entertained.
Absolutely, yes.
Two teams that seemed frightened, scared. And I think Liverpool's early goal really killed the game.
Well, I thought it was the 3-week gap between the end of the season. It was such a long time and no sort of meaningful warm-up games. I think the Premier League have got to look what they do about that. That's too long.
Yeah.
You know, in hindsight, I'm glad we didn't play like Ajax, because they might have been a bit more, or a Spanish team who would have been more in rhythm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a tricky one. I always think as well with football, trying to bring this back to golf, whether there's like a Liverpool fan who was playing in the last round somewhere, and did it make a difference?
Perhaps.
I know Paul Waring is a big Liverpool fan.
Yeah.
He's actually been on Liverpool TV as a guest.
Maybe him and Tom Lewis will win the golf sixes
possibly,
this week.
Yeah. George Coetzee, is he? He's not playing, is he, for South Africa? He's a big Liverpool fan.
George Coetzee is in the South African team alongside Brandon Stone. So there you go.
That could be our way in for that one, because I haven't got another way in for that one.
They're in Group D. We'll talk about the Golf Sixers shortly. Let's discuss what happened last week first of all. Patrick Cantlay closed in style at the Memorial. High class performance, which was just a reward, I thought, for a tremendous spell of golf. He was absolutely hammered in the market. And the punters definitely got one over on the bookmaker. 64 on Sunday to beat Adam Scott by 2. It was a faultless, nerveless performance from a man that was, for 55 weeks, the world number one amateur. And he's now starting to realise that potential on the big stage.
Yeah, we saw at the Masters, didn't we? Did he lead the Masters at one point?
Yes, late
on Sunday. Yeah, so this is a guy who's maybe not done it in such a flashy way as maybe a DeChambeau, where they've got loads of wins and suddenly, but then they go back a bit. He's just sort of very, very slow and steady wins the race, isn't he? And now what? Now what does he do? Does he? I think I read somewhere that he says he absolutely loves Pebble and he's played it a lot. You've got to have him on the shortlist.
He's going to be a huge factor, yeah. I think, next week at Pebble Beach in the US Open. And obviously, his career has been curtailed, but it's taken a while for him
stalled,
to...
Stalled, hasn't it?
Yeah, stalled because of the back issue he's had. And he's had, trouble with that. So he's not maybe peaked as quickly as some of the others that have come through, a la Jordan Spieth, perhaps. Yeah. But he's got so much belief in his own ability. And he was just firing every single pin on Sunday and never put a foot wrong.
Yeah, just went out and won that, didn't he? Which is impressive, because although he's there all the time, because he's only got one win, he's still got to think, well, he doesn't find getting over the line so easy, but he did there, didn't he? He just absolutely went out and won it. Look at what he shot in Vegas when he won 67 in the final round, so he can close out well. And I think, this is to win a tournament. Vegas is sort of like you start a tournament to win. That's one under the belt. Memorial is a big step up, and now you can see him landing a WGC or a major quite quick.
And not to forget, he finished tied third at the PGA Championship as well. Yes. So this has been a relentless spell of golf from Cantlay at the highest level. I thought what stood out statistically was that he didn't make a putt over 20 feet all week, which shows you how well he struck the ball from tee to green.
Yeah, I guess what you've got to do with someone like Cantlay, you get kind of used to a certain price that he's at, but because of his great form, he's obviously moved shorter. And I'm not sure what we could have done last week, because at 14s, can we realistically have tipped him at 14s?
Yeah, it was...
It's hard to know what to do, isn't it?
It was very difficult last week, because I fancied him strongly.
Was
and
he your don't want
Cantley.
To win?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Cantley throughout the... But because we record this podcast on Tuesday, the prices go up early on Monday.
Yeah.
You're suffering, really. And someone suggested that we need to record the podcast like at Monday lunchtime,
yeah,
just when the prices have come out. But yeah. It's not that straightforward, unfortunately.
No, and then we could be in the middle of it and the price could go. And then what do we do?
Yeah.
People never get a chance to get that price.
On the European Tour, Guido Migliozzi sealed his second European Tour title, having won in Kenya a couple of months ago. Aggressive young Italian saw off Darius Vandreel in the final. I actually watched some of the event this year, so I might remember it for next year. It wasn't half bad, actually. I know we've got the Golf Sixers, which is a different format again this week, but I kind of enjoyed it. I think maybe the problem with the event is the 36-hole stroke play to qualify for the knockout stages just lasts that little bit too long and doesn't really mean anything.
Well, I put up Chris Paisley, didn't I, at 40s on the podcast, and he won the halfway race. But I kind of felt the writing was on the wall when he was interviewed at halfway and he said, well, it kind of doesn't really mean anything. You felt maybe it should have meant more.
Yeah.
Maybe just to get a bye through one of the... They'd have to tweak the numbers, but...
Yeah, bye through
it.
Yeah, maybe one round.
Some sort of advantage. But his advantage was he played the 64th seed and was it they... If it was a tie in his first game, he would have got through.
Yeah,
but it seemed not much reward for... doing what he did.
And not only did they split the field into the top 16 from each group went through as well. Top 32 from each group went through. So that was something that
we knew nothing about
basically.
And neither did anyone else.
But is a fairer way of qualifying for the knockout
stages.
Yeah,
I thought it was because it sort of rules out a crazy bad draw, doesn't
it?
So that sort of made sense, but
it would have been nice to know.
Yeah, I think so. But then I don't know, where did Migliozzi finish in this regular stroke play?
I've got no idea.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't watch it that closely. I just saw the final.
Because that Kong Watmai, do you remember he scraped through in the World Super 6 Perth in the last place, I think?
Yeah.
And then got to the final in the first World Super 6 Perth. So if you're on it from that end, it's like a sort of championship team, isn't it? Just getting into the playoffs and then winning the Wembley final, maybe. So... Maybe
we've done a lot of football on this podcast.
We haven't,
we?
Yeah. So maybe if you bet in that event next year, maybe there's a feeling that the top qualifiers, even though they're in theory playing better, they might have a slight down feeling that they're not getting much reward for it. And you back the guys who've sneaked in and on a roll.
Let's talk about this week then. The Golf Sixers is the European Tour event. And Spain, Jorge Campillo and Nacho Elvira are the 11-2 clear market leaders. The English pairing of Tom Lewis and Paul Waring in the betting at 6-1. Ireland, defending champions Paul Dunne and Gavin Moynihan are 7-1. Australia's team, Scott Hend and Wade Ormsby are 9-1. The South African pairing, Brandon Stone and George Kutsaya, 11-1. Denmark, JB Hansen and Jeff Winter, 12-1. The Italians, Eduardo Molinari and Renato Paratori, are 12-1, along with Sweden's team, Alexander Bjork and Joachim Lagergren, and it's 14-1 and bigger the remainder. Let's start by discussing the format. It's a team event, and it will take place, the tournament, over the 2 days of Friday and Saturday, with the Nations League final being played on Sunday in Portugal. So
Football again.
So that's why it's Friday and Saturday. 16 two-player teams. I've just been through the market leaders. And basically, there are 32 six-hole matches, 24 of which are played on Friday. The teams are split into groups of four, with round-robin matches played on day one. The top two from each group go through to contest the quarters, the semis, and the final on Saturday. You get a point for a draw in a match, and 3 points for winning a six-hole match, and that's how the league table is decided. And they play greensomes, that's the format. So both players tee off, the team chooses a tee shot, and then from that point forward, it's alternate shot, and there's a 30-second shot clock at the fourth hole as well. And this has been widely regarded as one of the success stories with the tinkering of the formats from the European Tour. So this has been good, apparently. That's what the European Tour say for the first two editions. And yeah, they've been won by, in 2017, Lukas Bjerregaard and Torbjørn Olsen. So the Danes won, and then Paul Dunne and Gavin Moynihan won last year, as mentioned.
Yes.
What do you make to the format?
I don't mind the format, but I would say this is a betting podcast. One of the kind of catchphrases, more than a catchphrase, is to gamble responsibly. Don't bet on this. We're a half 1-2 as well, so you've got to get your team to the final.
Yep.
The only edge I can think of that maybe was in play last year was, are the women playing from like the women's tees?
That was the case last year.
And are they therefore a bit bigger priced? Because
I think you mentioned this on the podcast last year.
Yeah. And did one get to the quarterfinals?
Yeah. I think so. I'm with you. I don't think it's necessarily a betting proposition. I suppose the only thing you can consider this year is that they've moved venues as well. This is taking place in Portugal this year,
yeah,
at the Oitavas Dunes course in the town of Cascais. It's a link-style course on the coast, which is open to the elements. Fairways are wide and the greens have plenty of slope to them. And if you are looking for form, it's hosted the Open de Portugal on four occasions. First in 2005 when Paul Broadhurst won, and then in 3 years in quick succession, 07, 08 and 09, where Pablo Martin, Gregory Bordy and Michael Hoey all won. So
yeah,
you could look through those leaderboards, perhaps.
There's a few in the field, like Stephen Gallagher's played it four times. That opened to Portugal, got an 11th there, which is okay.
Yeah.
Jamie Donaldson's got the best record. He's got a fourth and an eighth, but obviously we're going back to 2009.
He's playing with Stuart Manley.
Yeah. Looking through, there was they're the only two who've done anything really, if you want to really tap into past some. But obviously Stephen Gallagher won the Indian Open, didn't he, recently. Scottish golf seems to be going through a bit of a renaissance as well, isn't it?
Definitely.
Robert McIntyre. So yeah. I think if I was absolutely forced to have a bet, I might just go for the Scots.
Yeah.
Based on a bit of a whim, but
yeah,
a bit of common sense as well.
Yeah, I'd be with I fancy the favourites, actually. I think Jorge Campillo and Nacho Elvira will go pretty strongly.
Yeah.
I think this is perfect course for them. Iberian Peninsula.
Should
go well. Yeah. The only negative is they're in a difficult group, in my opinion. It's probably the worst possible group for them. They've got the South African pairing of Stone and Kutsaya and Eduardo Molinari and Renato Paratori. Paratori qualified for the US Open.
Yeah,
and Molinari's playing better golf now as well.
With that, yeah. The Scots, the other Scots player is David Law, but he won the Victorian Open, if you remember, back in February, which was a good win. And then recently he was top 15 in the Trophy Hassan 2 in Morocco, and then 13th in the Belgian knockout. So he's no sort of make weight making up the Scots team. He brings some good form to it. So both the Scottish players have got a win this season, so that might just help.
Yep. Okay. But
not a bet for me either
in the Golf Sixes, I must admit. But I think it is a fun format, and hopefully it'll continue to blossom on the European Tour schedule. But this is a betting podcast, and no bets for myself and Dave. But we will have bets in the Canadian Open.
We will.
You have, haven't you?
Indeed, two of them.
Good, I've got two as well. Dustin Johnson is the 11-2 favourite for the Canadian Open. Brooks Koepka is 13-2. Rory McIlroy 8-1. Justin Thomas is 16s. Matt Kuchar is 18-1. Webb Simpson 20s. Sergio Garcia 25. Scott Piercy is 28-1. Bubba Watson and Henrik Stenson both 33s, and it's 40-1 and bigger the rest. And because this event is sponsored by RBC, and a few of the top players are attached to that banking company, it's a very top-heavy field that's been assembled for the Canadian Open, with the 1-2 from the PGA Championship, Koepka and Dustin Johnson, alongside McIlroy at the top of the betting. And Justin Thomas is a late entry as well, maybe trying to fine-tune his game ahead of Pebble Beach next week.
Yeah.
So he's a late entry into the tournament. Getting your head around this event is pretty difficult, though. I found it anyway that way, but given that after four straight years at Glen Abbey, the event has moved back to Hamilton Golf and Country Club, which last hosted in 2012 when Scott Piercy prevailed by one from Robert Garrigus and Willie McGirr. Harry Colt is the course designer, and he's a name that's more widely known for his work on courses this side of the pond. We're going to a Colt design for the Open Championship, Portrush, and Wentworth is another Harry Colt design as well.
There's quite a lot around here in Yorkshire, yeah, just there are, around the corner that you can just play for.
Is Moortown one of them? Is it Moortown? Sure.
But there's ones you can play for like 15 quid around here. It's like, really? And you sort of look, Harry Colt, that famous fella from the past. So, yeah.
It's a short course, isn't it?
It's a short course. It's sub 7,000 yards, which you don't get many of those these days. So, although I did look, actually, that even though there's some different courses have been used, it does seem to be that players like playing in Canada. Mm. And sometimes you can change the course and the form holds up. I think McGirt was runner-up at this place and Glen Abbey, which is a sort of modern, very different course to this one.
Yeah. That could be coincidence, I suppose, couldn't it?
It could be, but there's a few who've sort of done well across the board over the time. And we've got, 2012, you mentioned Scott Pearce. We've got 2006 form as well that goes a bit further back. I was listening to that, is it Golflandia podcast? Have you listened to that?
I have before.
They had some good stuff on about it. They had, whose caddy was it? Austin Connolly's caddy.
Okay.
Or caddy for the week. And they'd seen the course. Because I saw on Twitter that someone had, might have been him, that fellow himself, who showed a picture of dropping a ball in the rough and the ball was fully, you could see it and you thought, oh, is the rough like minimal?
Yeah.
But apparently that was a bit of a red herring and the rough is quite thick and it's been raining, so it'll be a bit gnarly. But it is obviously a short course. What they said on that as well was the par fives are an absolute doddle. There's only two of them.
Yeah.
But you're basically saying to the top guys, there's two under for your round already. But sub 7,000, you've got to think it's wedge and putting well, haven't you, this?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be about wedge play and a strokes gained approaching the green, personally, because you look at all but one of the par fours measures under 450 yards, and as you mentioned, both par fives are reachable. The par threes are difficult. That's the test, and that's what defends the score, I suppose, to a certain extent. But the players are going to go pretty deep here. It's going to be a birdie fest. The greens are not good. I think that's from what I've read. Poana surfaces, but because of all the rain, they don't drain particularly well.
Yeah.
So I don't think putting is good. I think you're going to have to hole lots of putts, but maybe the best putters aren't necessarily going to come to the fore because it's going to level the playing field. That's my personal opinion.
Possibly, yeah. That's one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
What other angles on it?
That's basically it for me. I think we're going to see a low-scoring week. I suppose the only other angle is that because the course is so short, this is kind of engineering towards my first pick. Maybe it's less than driver off the tee as well. You're not going to have to...
No,
if you can hit driver...
There's not many, is there four or five that they say?
Exactly.
They've also, I read, is it Mackenzie Hughes has played the course a lot, about 50 times. They're saying they've removed 1,000 trees since they last played there, so you've got to think it's a bit more wide open.
Yeah.
And look, I don't know how important the stats are from 7 years ago, but it does seem driving accuracy was the least important skill, and that often is the case, to be fair, isn't it? Looking at the stats from 2006 and 12, quite good. Hot putters were quite important. I know you said maybe that won't be the case this time, but...
I think that you'll have to make plenty of
birdies. But I think the sort of... Sometimes you look for a strokes gained off the tee chap. I think you can be a bit weak in that area maybe this time. I read player quotes where the usual, you've got to hit these fairways. And sometimes you believe that. Sometimes you just think, nah, you don't, do you really?
Yeah.
And I'm not really buying into that this week.
I've got two picks.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, you can lead off.
I'm going to click on his price now, and I reckon it's gone because I can't think it will be. No, it's still there. Jim Furyk at 50s.
Okay, yeah.
Won here in 2006. It's obviously good. Got a course win, opened with a 63 that year. Just plays the Canadian Open well. Runner-up when he defended the following year. Fourth in 2015. Recent play. We saw him runner-up at Sawgrass, which was a great effort. 13th at Colonial, which... is a sort of has some similar-ish traits, maybe. Not too bad at the Memorial. 33rd, he had a bad Saturday, but shot a pair of 69s either side of that. He should obviously give himself lots of wedge opportunities from the fairway. I'm surprised 50s on a what looks, if you sort of really narrow it down, a sub 7,000 yard course. Jim Furyk in form, 50-1. Yes, please.
I'm just casting my mind back to a few podcasts ago when I mentioned Jim Furyk.
Yeah,
well, you said he's gone, hasn't he, at the moment?
Well, I said you tipped him on the back of three missed cuts.
I mentioned him going into Colonial. I think was it.
Colonial?
Yeah, I mentioned him.
And his form was MC.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but then he was 100-1 that week.
Yeah, but I still think 50s this week.
Yeah, I think it's okay. Yeah, I think it's for a respectable price
for the runner-up at the Players' Championship.
But I'm just saying how quickly things can change in your mind, though, on the back of a couple of performances, perhaps.
Yeah, but obviously, since then he's finished 13th and 33rd.
It's just catching him on the correct golf courses. Yeah. I mean, you can ignore miscut with Jim Furyk on unsuitable golf courses. I think
But one of them was on the Heritage, you see. Yeah. So that should have been one of his good ones.
I get that. Yeah.
So
yeah. Now I can see Furyk going well.
But I think Furyk in this sort of form, backing him at 50s on a suitable course, is fine.
I think you'll probably hate my first pick then. I fancy Henrik Stenson this week.
Well, when you said less than driver, he's the one that jumps into your mind, isn't it?
When
he can, you know, waddle around with his three wood.
And I think this is just the perfect setup for Henrik Stenson. I think that this is the week he gets back in contention. It's been a disappointing season for him, hasn't it? I mean, he's not got a top 10 on tour, but it's remarkable given that he leads the tour in strokes gained approach this season. Number one in that category.
So what's he playing at then?
His putter's been ice cold all season, basically. I think there's reason to believe that he can challenge on this course, though. One is that it's Poana Greens this week, and relative to the rest of his stats putting on different surfaces, Poana Greens is where he excels, in inverted commas. So relatively speaking, this is a good sport. As mentioned, less than driver golf course. I think he can just plot his way around with his three wood here. He ranks 7th in driving accuracy, and that's because he's reliable with that club rather than the driver. And hopefully he'll give away a bit of distance off the tee and then be sharp with the with the wedges like he has been all season long. And in addition to that, Stenson has finished top 10 on his last couple of appearances at Wentworth, which I think similar traits to this golf course. Mentioned Colt has designed both, which is another tick in the box. And it's got kind of a European look to it, this golf course, as well. And I think he can get in the mix. And 33s looks attractive to me on Henrik Stenson, so I'm playing him a point and a half each way.
Is he someone who can just win from just sort of not doing much?
Yeah, that is the concern, because he tends to
put down a marker.
He tends to put down a marker, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I'm hoping he can.
I would have him more as maybe, if he, I don't know what his price is, as sort of a DraftKings sort of solid.
Yeah.
You get a top 15, 20 out of him. But I don't know whether he's challenging for the each way money.
Hopefully he'll get at least a top 6 this week. I honestly think if he puts well, and that's a huge if,
yes,
he'll contend this week, Stenson. And I just think that the greens will be, because they'll be bad, they'll level the playing field a bit.
Yeah.
That's my theory on it. So I'm going Henrik Stenson, 1.5 points each way at 33s.
Okay.
Second pick?
Brant Snedeker at 40-1. You've mentioned the Poana. Obviously, he puts well and doesn't get phased if they bump around a bit. Poana Greens, Brant Snedeker. Lots of wins on the West Coast. Did play here back in 2012, finished 34th, but second round 67, final round 66, can score well at Hamilton. It looks his sort of course, doesn't it? I think there's been some links maybe with Sedgefield, where he won with a 59, didn't he? So another shortish course.
Really, like, there'll be a 59 this week. That'd be an interesting little side market.
Yeah.
I could see a... I think it's possible.
Yeah,
there could be a, I'd like to see how the rough players first, but I think it's possible there could be a 59
I
this
reckon
week.
You might see a couple of players who might eagle both par fives in the same round.
Yeah.
So that's a chance. He does like the Canadian Open, Brant Snedeker. 8th last year, 5th 2016. Just two examples of some very good form. And then current form is good as well. It's sort of building towards something. He was 5th at Sawgrass. Last two starts, 16th in the PGA, and then tied 19th after a poor start at the Charles Schwab at Colonial. So I think he's going to a course where he can continue this return to top form. I thought 40s was quite acceptable.
Okay, 40-1 Brant Snedeker. Your second pick, it's Team Sweden for me this week because my other pick is Jonas Blixt.
Yeah, I did look at him closely, yeah.
Yeah, he's in the form of his life at the moment. You look through his long games, pretty much better than it ever has been, and he is just...
But he used to be terrible, didn't he?
Oh.
He used to think...
You used to wonder how he contended the way he struck the ball.
He had to make so many compensations, but... with his short game, but he did have the short game, so he can marry the two up.
Yeah, short game is still there as well. Putting's been good, puts really well on Poana actually, and when he gets hot he tends to stay hot for a while. He's pretty streaky. Jonas Blixt finished 20th at the Byron Nelson, which was a good performance, and then placed at Colonial a fortnight ago, and there's reason to believe this place will really suit him. He's got a good record on classical style golf courses, which this one is. And I like the fact he finished top 15 on his only start at Wentworth as well. He's maintained those strong stats, long game stats, for three or four successive tournaments now. And I thought 80s was a sporting bet.
Yeah. Yeah, he was definitely on my shortlist. I've got him down there. Has that been backed?
I think he opened 100s yesterday,
yeah,
and then he's been
jotted him down
into
that.
80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Might have just put me off slightly. Having said all that, and we've gone for players at 40s, 30s, 50s, 100s, it would be no surprise if two of the each-way places are just taken up, maybe three, by the big hitters at the top end.
Yeah, I can see Dustin Johnson. He would be the one out of the top three that I like the most.
It's a very different course to last week, but we're still in Ontario, and I think that's where all his in-laws live.
Yeah, he loves playing this event, doesn't he, the Canadian Open? And, I mean, he was... not unfortunate not to win the PGA Championship, but he showed his games in top-class order.
The thing as well is his putting stats are really good of late, so you think that might be the thing holding him back, but no, they're right up there.
I could see him winning. 11-2 seems fair. Brooks Koepka, less convinced by Koepka personally. I think he just likes overpowering long golf courses, and his record on shorter courses isn't anywhere near as strong. And he... is unlike DJ in the terms of he won't be looking to peak this week.
But he could just not do all those things and still finish fourth or fifth.
Yeah. Has Rory McIlroy had his purple patch?
Yeah, strange, wasn't it, what he did last week when you thought that should be a course for him. But it's meant to be wet again, short.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are his wedges good enough?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that's the one area of his game where he's really struggled.
Yeah.
From 125 yards and in. And if he's taking driver off a lot of these tees, which he will be the way he drives the golf ball and how aggressive he is, is that going to be beneficial for McIlroy? I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
8-1, I can leave him.
I can let Justin Thomas at 16s. I mean, what did he come home in 44 last week when he shot an 80?
He tempted me, though, because of that 80. He's not 10-1, 12-1 this week. He's 16-1.
Have you heard why he shot 80?
I think he just said it was rust basically last week, and he was hoping he'd shaken a bit of that off, and he's decided to come here in preparation for next week, which I think is a wise move. And it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. He played well on Thursday. If he bounced back, and 16-1 is attractive.
Yeah.
So out of those top four, definitely Dustin Johnson and Justin Thomas for me.
And then obviously 18-1 Matt Kuchar. You know when they say on the TV, when you hear the fans going, ooh, they're actually saying Kuchar. No, they're not. They're actually booing now because he's an idiot. What's he doing now?
Yeah, that was disgraceful behaviour as far as I was concerned.
How many more?
Even if he thinks he's in the right, you just cannot behave like that on the golf course. Ricky Fowler, you could see he was visibly annoyed.
Yeah.
Phil Mickelson the same. And Fowler tried his best for Matt Kuchar, and then it kept on going on and on and on. Asked for a second opinion. Second guy came over and told him, basically, just hit the thing.
Yeah.
And then he asked...
Can I get a third?
Jokingly for a third opinion. And it's just like, enough already, Matt Kuchar.
Mm. Plus, I obviously was raving about his chances last week and he missed the cut. Yeah. So, I don't like him at the moment.
No.
On many levels.
Yeah, and... Others that caught my eye, I must admit, Shane Lowry was on my mind.
Yes.
40-1. He's a specialist at Wentworth and third at the Heritage, followed by eighth at the PGA Championship. His tee to green games in fine working order at the moment. And we know all about his short game exploits. So Lowry tempted me at 40-1, and the other one, Erik van Rooyen, who qualified for the US Open at Brookside, 8th at the PGA Championship. No surprise to see him miss the cut the week after. In Denmark, his breakthrough is imminent, and he's used to the type of the conditions the players will encounter this week, like soft golf course, pretty cool, damp conditions. So yeah. I thought Erik van Rooyen would go well.
I think Scott Piercy's got a massive chance. He's playing great.
28 is short enough, though, isn't it?
That's obviously the sort of...
Yeah.
I think... Yeah, he's in play you don't want to win category, possibly. But I don't know, he's playing that well. That tempted. Bud Cawley?
Yeah.
Look at him.
I did look at him, yeah.
Can't putt, though, can he?
Yeah. He would be... he'd be of interest because he finished fourth or fifth here, didn't he, last time the golf... tournament came to Hamilton, and he was good last week.
Any views on like the guys who've played US Open qualifying? Like Duffner's got through, Ryan Palmer didn't get through.
To be fair, I've gone with one of them. Jonas Blix didn't get through.
Yeah. Did that have any bearing on it?
Not really. He shot plus two for his two rounds. It wasn't a complete disaster.
Yeah.
But Erik van Rooyen, full of confidence, and he qualified. So, no, it didn't have much. I don't think it matters either way, basically. Right. What's your thoughts?
Well, someone like Ryan Palmer, in theory, has got a good chance, but I think he shot 72 withdrawn, and you think, had he sort of not qualified by then?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I don't know, it's just sometimes, I need to see like empirical evidence of do qualifiers have a worse or better chance? Is there a relationship between qualifying and doing well, or does it go the other way? But plenty in the field this week you could look at. Keegan Bradley, if he could putt, it's got all the approach play that you want. I looked a few. Nate Lashley is a massive outsider, had some good strokes gained approach, but yeah, I'm really happy with Snedeker at 40s and Furyk at 50s.
Okay, let's recap the selections then. Dave Tindall, who's your player you don't want to win?
I'll go with Scott Piercy then at 28, yeah, although I am close at that price.
I think Justin Thomas I'd be closest to at 16-1,
yeah,
away from the two guys that I've gone for. So recap the picks.
Yeah, so go a point each way on Jim Furyk at 50-1, and that same point each way on Brant Snedeker at 40s.
Yeah, I'm going 1.5 points each way, Henrik Stenson at 33-1, and a point each way, Jonas Blix at 80-1 is my two picks. Dave? Pebble Beach next,
yeah, and obviously
I think this is the major I'm looking forward to most this season, the next one,
yeah, because it's
just because
it seems like there's more inclusive
and it's such
more
an
players.
Yeah, it's such an iconic venue as well, yeah. Isn't it, Pebble Beach,
exactly. Usual warning that if you fancy a player for Pebble, just keep an eye on how he's doing this week, because the market does react, doesn't it, sometimes, overly.
I think the last couple of weeks have been like that. Now Cantlay's into from 40s to
the odds
to 16s.
Spin you through the odds
For the US Open. Kepka 13-2, Dustin Johnson 8-1, Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods both 10s, Jordan Spieth 12-1, Justin Rose is 14s, Francesco Molinari, Jason Day, Justin Thomas and Patrick Cantlay all 16-1. Bryson DeChambeau is 20s along with Phil Mickelson and Ricky Fowler. You can see some of these prices that have just been put out there and left for all eternity and not moved. And then the guys that have done well have been clipped in, but the other guys haven't been pushed out yet. Yeah. So I'm sure they'll be looking at this market on Monday, but at the moment...
That'd be a rejig.
Some of them are pretty embarrassing.
Yes.
This market will be looked at on Monday, obviously, and it's just stagnated there.
Yeah.
But Cantlay into 16-1 now. Should have been thinking about backing him straight after the PGA Championship, and I didn't, unfortunately.
That's whether he's ahead of the handicapper, isn't it, really? And is he that good?
I really don't fancy Koepka next week. I'll put that out there.
Yeah, and I agree. I think he's done incredible, but he's won on sort of Koepka-made courses.
Yeah.
This isn't one of them.
No, he's going to take a huge chunk out of the market as well.
Yeah.
Maybe we're completely wrong, but I don't fancy
I'd have that feeling that if I was... to jump on Koepka now after he's won, I'm jumping on exactly the wrong moment when his chance isn't anywhere as good.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can definitely avoid him next week. Just if you think back to the last US Open at Pebble Beach, you've got Graham McDowell and Gregory Havre.
Yeah.
Short hitters. Yeah. So it can be
saying that Dustin Johnson.
Yeah, well, he's the sort of the outlier. He loves that place. He's won it twice, hasn't he? The Pebble Beach.
And he should have won the US Open.
He should have done, yeah.
Yeah.
But
he didn't.
We'll see. Yeah. I don't. Obviously, the form from that event, I don't know if anyone out there has got it. But obviously, the form at Pebble is only 50% useful, isn't it? Because two other courses.
I don't think the form in for the pro-am.
Oh, you think it's so
useful,
different?
Full stop.
Right.
Personally,
it's got to be some link.
Oh, maybe a little. Conditions are so different. Apparently, there's been no wet weather in the build-up.
So it's going to be dry.
It's going to be fast and firm, fiery. The Pacific Ocean's going to be in play throughout the week. I just think that. I wouldn't be concentrating on Pebble Beach Pro-Am events for next week, personally. But we'll see.
Yes.
We'll see.
Much to talk about next
week.
There
is. I'm looking forward to that. Mm. Dave Tindall, if you want to follow Dave on Twitter, at Dave Tindall Golf, you can follow myself at D Kellner. Make sure you check out all the betting at sports.williamhill.com and on the William Hill app as well. Should be a fun week with the Golf Sixers on the European Tour and the Canadian Open on the PGA Tour. Myself and Dave, we will be back next week for the US Open 2019. So stay tuned and make sure you keep with us for that. And best of luck if you're having a bet on the golf with William Hill this week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.